Back in the early 2000s, Lena Maria Useche and some other university students realized that though micro businesses accounted for 99% of businesses and 30% of the GDP in Brazil, these micro entrepreneurs had precious little to no support. With a passion for change, Aliança Empreendedora was born in 2005, or the Entrepreneurial Alliance. Since then, Lena and her team have driven dramatic economic improvements in Brazil through support to micro entrepreneurs and have done so with resilience, empathy, innovation, collaboration, and transparency. Here's my conversation with Lena. Lena Useche Kempf, welcome to the Nonprofiteers Podcast.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's great to have you. How are things in Brazil today?
Everything's fine. We are having a lot of good news on the entrepreneurial sector, so I can tell you a little bit about it later.
Okay, good. Tell us how you got started with Aliança Empreendedora, and maybe you can tell us what that means as well.
Sure. So Aliança Empreendedora means Entrepreneurial Alliance. And we started in 2005 as a group of students at the university. We actually got in contact a lot with other social entrepreneurs around the country. And in our city, we were dealing with micro businesses. And so we connected the need in the city we were studying. We were dealing with a lot of micro and small businesses that needed help to succeed. At the same time, we had contacts with other social entrepreneurs that were starting new ventures to support other entrepreneurs, especially young entrepreneurs. And we started to have contact as well with entrepreneurs in low-income communities. And so we started to realize there was a huge gap between the things we were learning in the university and the reality in the field. When we talk about micro entrepreneurship in Brazil, we're talking about 99% of the companies are micro and small businesses. So we are a country made by micro businesses. Half of them, more than half of them, are informal and are run by people in low-income communities. So we have this huge ecosystem with very fragile entrepreneurs. So we started to understand that. We decided to start an organization that was inspired by other social entrepreneurs around the country. We decided to start this organization to bridge this gap, like the gap between what people were talking about entrepreneurship and what entrepreneurship really was, especially in the base of the pyramid, especially in low-income communities, where people started their businesses because they needed to, not because they saw an opportunity, but because there was an income generation need. And so Aliança Empreendedora is born inside the university as a nonprofit dedicated to support these micro entrepreneurs in vulnerability in low-income communities, because there's a huge potential for them. It's a huge potential for the economy if we actually empower and train and provide support to these micro entrepreneurs in these communities. And that's how we started 19 years ago.
Wow, it's an amazing story. And when you went to college, were you intending on a future as a social entrepreneur, nonprofit leader, or did you just kind of fall into it?
So my experience in the university actually was the thing that changed everything. I went to college, went to university to get a degree and find a good job, like most of us do. But when I was there, I had the privilege to be in contact with social entrepreneurs around the country, thanks to the junior enterprise movement. And so attending events from students in different regions of the country, it was quite a privilege to be in contact with these people and see there is a whole ecosystem that I wasn't aware of, and that social entrepreneurship was something. Mm-hmm. Since the beginning, I got bitten by the social entrepreneurship bug, and that was it. and forever.
Good for you. Well, you got an early start.
Yeah, I was very lucky to be in contact with people that inspired me, because we started Alianza as a group. So I didn't do anything alone. It was a group of seven people that we started this together. So it was very important, because many people that start alone suffer a lot. I know it's very hard to start something new. Mm-hmm. If you're alone, mm-hmm. you have another set of difficulties in the way, but we were a group already in the beginning. So that made a lot of difference for us as well.
So are members of that group part of the organization today?
So we remain from the seven original founders. We are two, Elena and myself.
Okay. And I'm amazed at the statistic that 99% of the businesses in Brazil are run by micro entrepreneurs. Is that the number of businesses, or is that in terms of revenue produced?
That's the number of businesses. So if you take, there are about 40 million businesses in the country. 99% are micro and small, because there's a huge ecosystem of micro entrepreneurship in the country. They represent around 30% of the GDP. They are responsible for almost 80% of the jobs. So actually, almost three parts of the working force in Brazil is allocated in the micro and small business, micro small businesses, as entrepreneurs or as workers. So in Brazil is super representative. We call them the mattress of the economy. Like, they are the safety net of the economy, are the micro and small businesses, because they're so diverse. And so what you see, for example, in a crisis, an economic crisis, is that the big companies, they fire a lot of people. And the micro businesses just sustain the entire thing.
So you said that 99% of the businesses in Brazil are small or micro entrepreneurs. So that doesn't even include mid-sized businesses.
Yeah.
And that carries 30% of the GDP. That's a huge number.
Exactly. So part of what we do and why we do what we do is because of the huge potential that it is in these micro businesses. So we only talk about micro and small. There is a base of the pyramid. It is very important to be supported and accelerated, because they are a huge group and so representative, but unfortunately sometimes they're not given the support they actually deserve or the attention they deserve, because they are informal. They're so small, but when you put them all together, they're huge. That's why they're so important.
So when you started back in 2005, what were the gaps that you saw? What were a few of the most important things that the micro entrepreneurs really needed that they weren't getting?
So when we started, we realized that when we talk about entrepreneurship, we need to understand who we are talking to in terms of different types of entrepreneurs in the country. You have the huge companies, medium size, small, and micro. And in the micro business sector, you have different types of entrepreneurs in terms of their access to knowledge or vulnerabilities. So the first thing was, who are the people we're going to support? We decided to focus on the base of the pyramid, where micro entrepreneurs are living in low-income communities, mostly women, mostly Black entrepreneurs, mostly informal. Because the other entrepreneurs do have some support from the government, from other organizations, but we wanted to understand these entrepreneurs that were not recognized as entrepreneurs. We wanted to understand what they needed. So the first thing we did is we started to develop methodologies to provide knowledge, to training and capacity building. But then our first learning is that mm-hmm. we were doing everything wrong, because when we started to interact with these micro entrepreneurs, we understood that they didn't even see themselves as entrepreneurs. So when we went to the communities and start talking about businesses, these people looked at us like, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't have a business. What are you talking about? So we understood that these people were generating income. They have their economic activities for many, many years, but they had no idea that they were entrepreneurs. And what they had was a business. So that was our first huge learning and was the focus of our work until now, is helping entrepreneurs, micro entrepreneurs in these specific communities, help them understand that they are entrepreneurs and what they have is a business, and they can invest in their entrepreneurial journey. That's what we do. We help them realize they are entrepreneurs and that it's worth it to invest in their entrepreneurial journey, because they can unlock a lot of different opportunities if they get formalized, they can access credit. So we help them in the first stage, the very, very early stage of their entrepreneurial journey. That's where we focus.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. In the first 5 years, what were the biggest challenges you faced in terms of getting the nonprofit off the ground and making sure that you could sustain the work of the nonprofit? What were your biggest challenges in those early days?
Wow, let me remember. So we started as a group of volunteers. We were seven working volunteers, at some times paying to work to sustain the beginning of the organization. One thing that was very important for us was our networks. So the seven of us started to connect with everybody we knew, like connecting with the people that we have been in contact in the university, in the companies that interacted with the university. And that's how we started. We started building a small network. And from this small network, they started to replicate and increase the network. So I would say the first challenge, but the first thing I think we did right, was to connect with a lot of people, because that was the only way to take to the next level. We needed funding, and to get funding, we needed to talk about our project to as many people as we could, so they could talk about our projects to their networks and so on. So we had this one person in our team that was focused on that, building networks, making meetings, talking to people. That was the only way to make this happen. By the time some of us were working on the field, some of us were working on the management of the things, on the legal part and the administrative part, there was one person dedicated to open new connections, making new contacts and building a network for Alianza.
And when you started, were you always clear on the vision and mission of Alianza Emprendedora?
So that's interesting. Like we always knew where our mission was. We needed to understand how to make it happen. So we were very clear since the beginning that our mission was to support micro entrepreneurs and generate economic and social development through entrepreneurship working in low-income communities. But we had not a clue on how to do that. We were very naive in the beginning, thinking that only knowledge will save the world. Then we understood that that's not enough.
That's a very common academic assumption, right?
Exactly. We actually needed to learn. We learned it the hard way by taking the knowledge there to the community and they giving the feedback that this is not useful at all. So I don't need this. I have bills to pay, so don't start me with business plans and this, I don't know, 50 pages of readings. I don't have time for that. I have bills to pay. So it was a very rich learning in this beginning. It was not easy, not easy at all to hear that, but it was important for us. We needed to understand what actually the entrepreneurs needed.
How many people in the organization today?
We are almost, I think we're 45 now. This is like the core team. We have consultants that we activate in small periods of time during the year, depending on the size of the projects that we run. Now we are around 46, 45. We run around 25 projects per year, and we support 30,000 people per year. We train
Wow.
30,000 people per year. Last year were 46,000, but the average
Yeah.
for the past 3, 4 years were 30,000.
I saw so many of the projects on the website. So what constitutes a project? What does that mean? What is a project? Is a
So,
project one micro entrepreneurship or is it something else?
good question. So we have the projects with companies actually is our business model. Alianza has been growing and it sustains itself and can actually offer this support for free for entrepreneurs because we have companies and foundations. So the projects are very tailor-made with the private sector. So we have a company, they want to support, let's say, Black women entrepreneurs in the northeast of the country. So we respond to this demand. We are like a consultancy for companies and we develop the projects with them. And so they pay for it, for the entire program. And that's how Alianza gets its funding, by delivering projects to support micro entrepreneurs in different parts of the country in partnership with these companies that have a demand. They have an institute or they have a specific goal with their brands, for example. Some companies are repositioning their brands and they want to align their brand to women empowerment, for example. So we deliver projects so we're going to support 100 women in this specific city, or we're going to support 10,000 women in this region with the funding of this company. When we talk about projects, usually they are 1 year project. And we renew it annually with these companies. We have around 20 partners per year, 25, 20, 25 companies that hire Alianza to develop and implement those projects in the field in different parts of the country. That depends a lot on the funder. So this is the main source of revenue for Alianza Emprendedora nowadays is selling projects. And through those projects, we support 30,000 entrepreneurs per year. And
Wow.
on the other hand, we have programs that are permanent. We have a web platform that has a lot of online trainings that is run continuously. And we have public policy influence. We have a program just to influence public policy. We have advocacy campaigns. We have things that run permanently. Our mentoring program runs permanently. But then we have the projects that also contribute with those programs, but they have their own life. And we have teams working on different projects. And that's how we got here
Yeah,
today.
it's an amazing ecosystem. And it sounds like the partnerships are really, the engine that helps with the funding and resources for your organization. And I think what's unusual about it is you're giving companies in the private sector that will then pay you, it sounds like, projects and work that's of interest to them, but it's also highly beneficial to the micro entrepreneurs.
Exactly. So what we've been doing this 19 years was to match this interest, the interest of the company and the interest of the micro entrepreneurs. So we wanted to make sure that we were going in the same direction. And so we have been building projects with that and influencing the companies as well to see that there is a good micro entrepreneurship is a good investment. It's not just a social, but it's a good investment in many ways.
Yeah. What are some of the successes? Give me an example of something, a success you've had, a project that, say, over the last 5 years.
We have many. I will say one, this is a company that is not well known worldwide because it's a big company in Brazil, but she's it's a supermarket that works in wholesales. So it's called Açaí. We have a project with them for 6 years now. And what we do with them, these supermarkets are all around the country, and most of their clients are micro and small businesses, are micro entrepreneurs that work with food. Let's say they have a small restaurant, or they prepare food in their houses to sell in the neighborhood, like cakes or sweets. Mm-hmm. And so there are entrepreneurs that are focused, that are our focus. They're informal, they're very, very small, mostly women. So we have this match at first. So most of their clients are our target audience, and they wanted to be seen as a company that empowers the micro entrepreneurs in the food sector. That's something that was in their, like in their mission, in their vision as a company. They wanted to be seen as a company that is a partner to those micro entrepreneurs in the food sector. So they partnered with Alianza Emprendedora to create a project that provide capacity building, training, and funding for those entrepreneurs. And what we have today is that every year, we have around 20,000 people subscribing to be part of this program. This program is like an acceleration program where people get, they apply for it, then they all receive an online training, so they can all access the entire online platform. They can be trained online. It's not an open platform. People can get all the information they need. They can do all the courses that are specific for their business, because we, with Açaí, with this supermarket, we develop content that are very specific for each type of entrepreneur in the food sector. We develop in details for people working in the sector. So everybody that apply enters in the online program. From them, the ones who finish the courses, we make a selection process to get to the second part of this, that is a WhatsApp live training. So we have a WhatsApp live training where people have a complete 1 week training through WhatsApp live with one of our facilitators. They go through this process. From that group that finishes, we run a second selection process, and then they receive one-on-one mentoring. I think 200 of them receive one-on-one mentoring. And then we move to the third part where we select 30 micro entrepreneurs that are going to be accelerated and will receive funding for the businesses. So this is one type of project that we do every year with this company. The stories are amazing. At the end of this funnel, what you get, which is really nice, is you have a lot of inspirational stories, and we use those stories to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs. We use these stories to populate the media with examples of real entrepreneurs. So it's like a circle, and we work on closing that gap.
It also sounds like over time you've developed with these projects templates. So with every project, you don't have to reintroduce the wheel. You know the resources they need. You know the training they need. You know the partnerships they need to form. You know how to work with the partners who are providing the funding.
Definitely. Yeah. And we are very rigorous when it comes to methodology. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a target audience that in most of the cases are very vulnerable. So we need to be very careful about the expectations we raise. So we are very responsible in that matter. And we know that we need to be very responsible. We cannot open an expectation with people that are in vulnerable situations. So we are very transparent and we are very rigorous with the methodology.
That's terribly important. One of the things that strikes me about your model that's very unusual is that your indirect beneficiaries are also your funders, right? So you just mentioned Açaí. They're a beneficiary even though they're paying you.
Definitely.
Right? And that's the formula for a partnership template where everyone wins.
Yes.
So it's very impressive that you've cracked that code there.
Yeah, so it's very interesting what you say, because for us, the micro entrepreneurs and the funders, they are both clients. So we see them as clients, right? And we have the entire empathy map to, they both need to receive a benefit.
So what's the most fun part of the job for you? What do you really enjoy doing?
The first thing, and that will always be the most fun part, is being with the entrepreneurs. There's nothing that tops that. I mean, because I moved to a more strategic position, relationship position, I have less time with the micro entrepreneurs because I'm more on the administrative. I need to travel to attend events. I have meetings with companies. That's my role. So I have less and less time to be with the entrepreneurs. So when I have the opportunity to be with them in our annual events, in different events that we run around the country, that's, for me, is the best part ever, to be with them, exchanging with them, learning from them. That's the best part. When I have one or two mentoring sessions, that's the best. Nothing tops that. And then the second part is when we get, for example, a new project approved, when we actually influence a public policy. Last week, we had three public policies approved that we helped to design and improve. So that's amazing. It makes us really, really happy, this sense of accomplishment, but it's in second place. My first place definitely will always be being with the entrepreneurs.
Yeah, you have that in common with a lot of nonprofit leaders. Yeah. They love the program work, even though they might not get to spend a huge amount of time with beneficiaries. That's what a lot of them say they love. So what about mistakes you've made? What's the most difficult part of the job? And what have you learned about that over the span of your career?
Yeah, so I would say the first and biggest mistake was one of them in the beginning was it started from a hypothesis that entrepreneurs needed knowledge and a business plan, and that, thank God, we learned fast and we could redefine, go through a process of rethinking and reshaping everything we knew and everything we learned and start from scratch. So that was one thing. It was very important and it was crucial for us. When we started some programs with companies, the other thing that we have been learning a lot is that most of the time the companies want to impose, I mean, their needs and sometimes over the needs of the beneficiaries. And it was quite a learning curve to understand how to balance that. Because sometimes it happened. Companies wanted something that was not good for the entrepreneurs or was useless per se, not bad for them, but was useless. And so learning that and trying to balance these power relations, I would say that was the hardest part. Is it still a challenge? Less than in the beginning, because in the beginning we were nobody, right? So they have all the power. They were the funders, they had the money, and they have all the power. And they could influence how we would do the things, where we would do the things, to whom we would do the things. So it was really, really hard to balance that. And we started learning how to balance that. Now, it's not easy. It's still not easy, but we are in a different position. I feel that because it's been 20 years, we are a national reference. Now we can kind of negotiate in the same level, but it was really, really hard. We did projects we didn't want to because we needed the funding to continue operating. And this is a huge learning curve. And actually, the other thing that comes from that is pricing. When we are budgeting, it's the same thing, balancing the power relations with the funders to them understanding that there is a value in the things we do and there is a price to pay for the things we do. That was another huge learning. Like, we did a lot of under cost projects.
Underpricing
a lot, and learning that we had a value added to this company, seeing them as a client, but also helping them see us as a value partner and as a valued commercial partner as well. Like, we have something that you will not find in other organizations. So building this thing was very, very challenging.
I'm sure having the organization become bigger and gain a solid reputation was helpful, but it also sounds like your negotiation skills have advanced, and I'm sure just the way you approach the process, like I would think when you're working with a company that's going to support a group of micro entrepreneurs, setting expectations is very important. And so you, after 20 years, I'm sure you have a lot of that information and a lot of those skills ready to bring to bear to the early part of the relationship. So you get off on the right foot.
Definitely.
Yeah. So if you had three pieces of advice for someone working in a nonprofit, what would your three pieces of advice be to a nonprofit leader?
Okay, I actually wrote an article about that,
Okay.
about these three things that I suggest to social entrepreneurs. The first is to build a healthy team. Sometimes the entrepreneurs, especially in the beginning, they do everything by themselves. They work 24/7, they don't rest. It's normal at the beginning, but at some point, you need to work in a healthy way. Otherwise, all the impact you want to do is going to die with you because it's not sustainable. So, for social entrepreneurs, I always say it's okay in the beginning for you to work 24/7, but that's a very small part. You need to start building a team and a group of people where you can share responsibilities and activities so you can rest. Social entrepreneurs need to rest. They need to have a healthy mind, a healthy body. Otherwise, it's not sustainable. Starting a new venture with that in mind is very important because sometimes we forget about that. We forget that we need a team. We forget that we need people and a structure to do that. That's my first advice. Be conscious about your own health and that the impact you want to create in the world depends on you being healthy and sustainable as a person as well. So that was first. The second is very connected to that. That is, most social entrepreneurs, they don't realize that what they do has a value for funders. Learn that what you do has an intelligence. And this is intelligence, you need to price it. You need to put a price on the intelligence you are providing to your funder. It's not just work in the field. It's not just budget by the cost you will have, but it's understanding that the intelligence you bring to the table needs to be counted, needs to be charged, because that's the only way this social venture is going to grow. If you are not a profitable organization, even though you are a nonprofit, the word nonprofit means that you are not going to distribute the profit with the associates or the entrepreneurs. It doesn't mean you need to be an organization that doesn't have good
Thank
results,
you.
positive results
Thank
at the end
you.
of the day. So there's totally different things. Being a nonprofit, it doesn't mean you don't need to have a positive result.
Absolutely.
So that was my second advice was that. But be conscious that the only way your impact is going to grow, if you have a healthy financial situation that can bring you to the next level and can help you scale your impact around your country or your region or even your city, you need that because your team needs that. You need to have people that are very professional. You have to retain your talent. So and for that, you need money. So that would be the second part of it. And the third is focus. There comes a time when we need to start learning to say no to some things, to focus on the things we are good at And that is going to, that's when the tipping point comes for growth and
Mission
scale.
creep.
Yeah.
Have you heard that phrase?
No, never heard of it.
That's a very common phrase in nonprofits where you start doing things and maybe you're getting bigger, maybe you're scaling, maybe you're interested in other things, but you forget to focus. And a mission creep just means that you start doing things that aren't really connected directly to the mission and the vision
Got it.
that you've established, right? So it's very tempting and a very common problem
Yeah.
for nonprofits and NGOs. And the, you know, the first one I've heard a lot, the last one I've heard a lot, and I've heard the second one a lot. The second one is interesting though, because you know, in your situation where you've got these unique partnerships, being very clear about the value of that partnership for the funder and then
Exactly.
setting the right price for that and not underpricing that, right? The classic thing that nonprofits do also is not to price things appropriately, not to share real costs, right? And that happens inside the organization too, with boards, not talking to boards about what things really cost, you know? And you get yourself into trouble with that. So those are very impressive three insights. So you're going to have to point me to your article.
I'll do that. It's in Portuguese, but you got it. Now
That's
artificial
okay.
intelligence can translate everything.
That I noticed your website is Portuguese too, but there's a, you know, I just clicked English and everything was beautiful.
Yeah, definitely.
The other thing I didn't tell you is I think when I was at Mercy Corps, I did work in microfinance with a, creating a wholesale bank in Indonesia. And I was really fascinated with that work. And I think a lot of assumptions that governments and funders and even social entrepreneurs make around micro entrepreneurship still exists today. I love the experience and the insight you had that a business plan for a micro entrepreneur wasn't actually the most important thing, right?
Not at
Yeah.
all.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, I'm so grateful that we were able to spend the time today.
Thank you. Love it.
And thank you for your time. And how can people plug in to Aliança Empreendedora if they're interested? What's the best way?
So the website is more like a static where you can just find information from the past. But if you want to stay connected, is there our Instagram? That's the best channel to follow Aliança on Instagram, where everything is updated, communications is real in real time. LinkedIn as well, our page on LinkedIn and Instagram will be both channels of communication, and they're very updated. And we have a
Well,
newsletter if you want to sign the newsletter as
okay,
well.
I will. I'm going to spread the good word about your work. I think it's unique and really beneficial to Brazil.
Amazing, thank you.
And let's keep in touch.
Definitely.
I hope, and if there's any way I can help you moving forward, please let me know.
Let's keep in touch.
Okay, Lena, great to see you. Take care.
Thank you very much for this invitation. I loved it.